I remember like it was yesterday, watching the Obama victory celebration in Chicago's Grant Park in 2008. Hundreds of thousands gathered in the cold November night, supporters, campaign staff, and celebrities. But what do I recall most vividly? Oprah Winfrey and Jesse Jackson, both with tears in their eyes, witnessing the election of the first African-American president. For young people not yet old enough to vote, too young to have taken part in civil rights marches or completely understand the struggle that African-Americans made over the past half century, it's another story. As Barack Obama told the Washington Post in 2009, quote, "There is an entire generation that will grow up taking for granted that the highest office in the land is filled by an African-American. I mean, that's a radical thing. It changes how black children look at themselves," end quote. This is Central Standard. I'm Steven Steigman. And in just a moment, we'll look at a new study by a KU psychology professor about how children perceived race and gender in the 2008 campaign. Now, later in the show, we'll preview the inaugural season of FC Kansas City, our town's major league soccer team. But first, how children perceive race and gender in presidential elections. Our guest is Megan Patterson, an assistant professor of psychology and research in education at the University of Kansas. Megan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about the goal of your study and why you decided to focus on perceptions of race and gender in presidential elections.
Well, I think first off, politics is a really important domain for children, and we don't necessarily know a whole lot about children's understandings of politics. Mm-hmm. I think adults often assume that children don't pay much attention to politics or don't really think about it very much. And it turns out, as we found in the study, that that's not true. Children were quite aware of the presidential election. And the 2008 election was this really fascinating kind of natural experiment where children were seeing for the first time the possible election of an African-American to this highest, most important office in the United States, and also, alternatively, the possible election of a woman to the vice presidency, also a very important and powerful office. So we were really interested in looking at how children thought about those issues and how they perceived them and what they knew about the election and race and gender in the election.
So what were the questions you wanted to figure out about in asking these questions? What did you want to find out in the end?
Well, ultimately, we wanted to know, first, just were children aware of the election? Did they pay attention to it? Again, that wasn't something we really knew before doing this study. And then what kinds of information did children have about the election and what were their sources of that information? Were they talking to parents or teachers or their peers, those kinds of questions? And then also, how did they think about the influence of race and possibly racial bias in the election? Did they think that Obama's race would be an advantage or a disadvantage to his chances of being elected? And then similar questions for gender. Did they think that Palin's gender would be potentially an advantage or a disadvantage to her ticket's chances of being elected?
And finally, afterwards, you wanted to figure out the outcome of the election and what type of effect that had on people's children's perception of elections.
Right. So we interviewed children both before and after the election. We also wanted to look at what was the potential impact of seeing Obama elected on children's views of thinking about race and politics in the United States. We also looked at children's aspirations to become president themselves and whether those might change as a result of Obama's election.
Tell us about these children you studied. How well informed, where were they from and how well informed were they?
So in this study, we had about 130 children. They were elementary school age children, ages 6 to 11, about an equal mix of boys and girls. And then we tried to get children from a variety of racial backgrounds, so European American, African American, and Latino children. And some of them were from here in the Kansas City area. Others were from the Austin, Texas area. So we had two different metro areas included in our sample.
Did you prick them on particular criteria? I mean, did you pre-interview them?
No, we basically took who came. I mean, other than that, we were trying to get, like I said, a variety of racial backgrounds. So mm-hmm. we tried to choose, populations to recruit from where we thought we would get a somewhat larger than average number of African-American and Latino children because we wanted to make sure we had those groups well sampled.
What role did socioeconomic status play in selection of children?
We did not use socioeconomic status as a criteria. I mean, we do know that socioeconomic status tends to be associated with race in the U.S. So we did try with our population of European American students specifically to try to get some lower income European American kids in the sample as well to try to balance that out a little bit. But we didn't specifically try to control for socioeconomic status. It just wasn't possible with the sites and time constraints we had.
That could be a whole other study in and of itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where were these kids getting their information?
Well, there were a number of different sources. So the most common sources of information about the election were parents and television.
Surprise, surprise.
Right, exactly. so not as many from the radio, although some children did mention
Shame.
Radio. television, and I think one of the things that's interesting about television is this idea that a lot of these television programs that kids were watching weren't necessarily programs aimed at children. So they're watching the nightly news. They're watching more of these programs that are actually aimed at adults and getting messages from those programs.
I mean, is that because the adults are watching them already, or is that because the kids say, turn on NBC Nightly News?
Well, we're not sure. I think it's probably some of both. So in some instances, the parents are watching and the kids are watching along with them or listening to the radio in the car, that kind of thing. But in some instances, the children certainly did seem to be seeking out this information on their own. So some of them did talk about particularly trying to watch the news or going online and looking for information about the candidates online, particularly among the older kids in our sample.
Any idea of what role television advertising played? Political ads played in their knowledge of the candidates?
That's a great question. We don't know about that specifically. I think we know that generally speaking, when you talk to particularly older students than what we had in our sample, when mm-hmm. we talked to adolescents, they will often talk about the negatives involved in political advertising and how much those kind of can be a turnoff in terms of interest in politics and political engagement. We do also know that young children, preschool age, early elementary school age children aren't very good at distinguishing between a program and a commercial. So for those kids, those ads could potentially be quite influential because they're not sure what's news and what's a commercial at uh-huh. those young ages.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is something I've discovered being the parent of young children, which is they absorb everything, even things not directed at them.
Absolutely.
And how did parents influence, either directly or indirectly, their kids' interest or involvement?
Well, lots of kids reported getting information from parents. So again, parents were one of the most common sources of information. The large majority of kids reported they had talked with their parents about the election in some form. And we asked in this study about a number of different aspects of what we call political socialization, so basically exposure to political messages from the parents. And we found that, so this included things like, talking to the parents about the candidates, talking to parents about which candidate they wanted to win the election and why, going with the parents to vote, all of those different kinds of aspects of socialization. And we found that the kids who reported they had had more of that socialization from their parents, they talked to their parents more about politics, were more knowledgeable about the election, were more likely to know the candidates, to know who'd won the election, to know political party memberships, all of those different kinds of things. So the more parents talked, the more kids knew.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Stephen Steigman. We're talking today about race, gender, and the 2008 election and the influence it had on children and the way they interact and their perceptions of race and gender in presidential elections. We're talking with Megan Patterson, an assistant professor of psychology and research and education at the University of Kansas. Megan, let's get to the meat of the study here. Let's talk about the questions you asked participants. First, you asked European Americans, and you call them European Americans, not Caucasians. Why? Explain that for a moment.
Well, partly it's honestly for grammatical reasons, for parallel form. It's more parallel to African American. And then also, we try to avoid the terms white and black because those are often considered more kind of value-laden terms. Mm-hmm. And so we try to avoid that. It's also just consistent with the style of the professional association, the American Psychological Association prefers those terms.
Okay, so first you ask European Americans, Latino Americans, and African Americans what they thought about a woman running as vice president. And what were the results you got?
Well, we found there that one of the things that we found here was that overall, children seem to feel fairly positively about the idea of a female vice presidential candidate. Certainly girls, however, seem to feel more positively than boys. So girls were more likely to say they were happy or excited about a female vice president. Mm-hmm. Boys tended to feel a little bit more neutrally. We also asked kids about their perceptions of others' reactions. Mm. And there we found a bigger difference. So children tended to think that boys would feel quite negatively about there being a female vice president, much more negatively than boys actually reported feeling.
Oh, interesting.
So there's sort of that perception of gender bias going on there.
And I saw that children viewed Palin's gender as having a more positive effect prior to than after the election.
Right, right. So we asked children, do you think Palin's gender will help or hurt her ticket's chances of being elected? And it wasn't a big shift, but we did see a slight shift after the election to children saying that Palin's gender wasn't quite so helpful, which is not surprising given that her ticket didn't win. But I think it does show again that children are paying attention to those issues of race and gender, that once Palin's ticket didn't win, they were partially at least attributing that loss potentially to gender and gender bias. Mm-hmm.
And you broke these down into positive results, positive responses, neutral responses, and negative responses. Mm-hmm. And the negative responses I found really quite interesting here. I hate to be a pessimist, but like this one from an 8-year-old Latino American boy, when asked how he felt when he found out a woman would be running for vice president, this is what he said: bad, because she will be treated bad. There's a bit of empathy there, not your typical women shouldn't be vice president.
Right. Yeah. And I think, one of the great things about this study is we asked a lot of open-ended questions. So we were able to really get at children's thinking and reasoning and get those really interesting responses from the children. And that example was one, yes, where the child had sort of a negative reaction to Palin's candidacy, but it wasn't about him being biased against her. It was a concern about the way that she would be treated, and again, possibly reflecting things he'd seen on the news or messages he'd heard from parents or teachers about the possibility of bias against her. And certainly that's something that other researchers have found, that there were some biases potentially in the media portrayal of Palin. So we did look and see those empathy-based responses weren't as common as responses that were based more on a negative perception of her gender, but they did happen in some cases, absolutely.
Let's get back a little bit to the results of how the children think others reacted to the presence of a female candidate. And the question here was, how do you think girls or boys felt when they found out a woman was running, going to run for vice president running for vice president? And these responses could, again, be coded as positive, neutral, and negative. And here, the perceptions of girls' responses. One said excited because there has never been a girl VP. Another one said good because they will think she's going to talk to McCain to help women. And three, a little bit surprised. They thought it would be another boy. These are all really interesting responses. Tell us, how did you collect these? Were these one-on-one interviews?
Yes, okay. These were one-on-one interviews with the kids. So I or other research assistants or some of my collaborators on the project worked on going out to schools and after-school care programs. And it's, sitting on the floor talking to kids and just writing down their responses.
And here the perception of boys' responses. Now, this is what girls was this how girls perceived how boys would think?
This is both boys and girls' perceptions of how boys would think. So we asked all kids, how do you think boys reacted? How do you think girls reacted?
And now here are a few of those. Not happy. Boys like boys better. Not surprising there, actually. Here's another one. Surprised probably because no girl has ever been VP. Here's another one. They don't care or didn't pay attention. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, and that's something we did see in some cases, that perception that the gender of the candidates wasn't important to boys the way that it was to girls. And we actually saw parallel findings for race, the idea that Obama's status as the first African-American president wouldn't be as important to European-American kids as it would be to African-American kids.
Let's move on to the perception of how Obama's race would affect his chance of being elected. Interesting one here. Older children viewed his race as more detrimental than younger children. The idea of younger children being colorblind, or conversely, that older children are a little bit more aware of negative stereotypes.
Sure. Well, it's certainly true. We know from lots of different research that young children are not colorblind. So even children as young as 3 or 4 are aware of race and aware of the importance of race in our society. And so certainly we saw that in this study. Children, even the youngest children in our sample who were 6, were certainly aware of Obama's status as the first African American president, and that no African American had previously been elected president.
Tell us about some of the responses of children to the idea of the presence of an African-American candidate.
Sure. Well, as you said, most of the children responded very positively to the presence of an African-American candidate. They were excited about this, the idea that that lack of African-American presidents would end, that this role was opening up to more people. Most children reacted quite positively to this. We did see a greater percentage of positive reactions among African-American children than we did among Latino or European-American children, reflecting that they were more excited, more happy about Obama's candidacy, or the candidacy of an African-American specifically.
Were there any quotes from them that stuck out in your mind as being, you know, more interesting than others?
Oh, goodness. I'd hate to try to quote them off the top of my head. I don't necessarily remember any of them verbatim.
And again, the African-American children, I'm looking here at a chart of how children felt about the presence of an African-American candidate. And African-Americans, 75% of the responses were positive, 11% were neutral, and 7% were negative. Do you remember anything, the negative responses?
Sure, sure. I think some of the negative responses that we saw from African-American children were somewhat similar to that response we heard about earlier about Palin, a concern about the way that Obama would be treated. We did occasionally get responses, for example, from African-American children that they were concerned about Obama potentially being assassinated. And that's something we only saw among African-American children. They seem to be particularly aware of that possible threat to Obama. And so that's where some of those negative responses conceivably, you know, were coming from.
There's one that really struck me, which was this one, quote, "I felt not good because," this is coming from an African-American, "I felt not good because I don't like black people being president. I only like white people being president." Again, said by an African-American boy. Can you read into that at all?
Well, it's a challenging thing to read into, certainly. I mean, I think there are certainly instances in which African-American children see the patterns of what's going on in their world. You know, they see that African-Americans aren't as frequently in these high status positions, and they sometimes will sort of say, we should maintain that status quo. And young children are a little bit more likely to say the status quo should be maintained than older children or adults. You know, I think maybe just reflecting on that, this is the way things are, and I think maybe this is the way they should continue to be, might be one pattern. We certainly do sometimes see, you know, also in African-American children, sort of an internalization of bias. So the idea that they see this bias against people like them out in the world, and they may in some cases internalize that bias and start to endorse it.
Do you think those answers would have changed if, depending on where you held your study, if you had done this study of, let's say, African-Americans in, you know, upper middle class suburban neighborhood versus an inner city poorer neighborhood, would you expect those responses to change?
I think that's certainly possible. I mean, we don't have the data, so we couldn't say for sure. But I think it's certainly possible that we would see some different patterns of responding given that. I mean, I think certainly African-American kids from all kind of economic backgrounds are aware of bias and prejudice. But at the same time, how that plays out in their own attitudes and their own aspirations certainly may be different.
How did perceptions and feelings about race change after the election?
Well, we certainly asked a number of questions after the election. We didn't necessarily ask exactly the same questions, but one of the things that we found was that certainly there were some positives about views of race and the idea that Obama's election could mean positive things for race relations in the U.S. One of the interesting things we found there in terms of asking about what are the implications of the election for race relations is that Latino children seem to be a little less positive about those perceptions of race relations following the election compared to European American and African American children.
Yeah, how so?
Well, we asked a series of questions that basically asked, do you think, given Obama's election, this means race relations are better, are more equal, more fair? Do you think that Obama's election means that now white people will treat black people equally? Versus, do you think, even though Obama's been elected, bias will continue. So even though Obama's been elected, it's still going to be more difficult for African Americans to be successful than it is for European Americans to be successful, for example. And again, we found that Latino children were just a little more likely than European American and African American children to err on that bias will continue side.
Hmm.
And one hypothesis for why this might be occurring is that Latino children are still not seeing people like them represented in these high offices. They're not seeing a Latino president or vice president or even a candidate. So having that absence may be having a potentially a negative impact on Latino children's perceptions of race and how people like them are treated in the U.S.
Well, Kansas City, do you think children are beginning to see past race? Our number, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us, centralstandard@kcur.org. Do we have information about what impacts these aspirations have as a person develops?
Well, one of the things that we know is that certainly as children get older, they, although they're aware of race from very early ages, as they get older, they may place more emphasis and have a deeper understanding on the impacts of bias, stereotypes, more awareness of the possibility of discrimination as they get older. As we get older, we develop cognitively, we get better at thinking about other people's perspectives and that kind of thing. And that makes us potentially more aware of other people's bias. And we do know that potentially awareness of bias and stereotypes as children get older, particularly moving into adolescence, that can start to have negative impacts on things like academic performance and occupational aspirations. So not aspiring to those professional jobs, those jobs that require college and things like that, because you feel like there will be discrimination against you in those academic settings or in those workplace settings.
Do you conclude anything about the various kids' aspirations to want to become president?
Sure. So that is one of the questions we asked, is looking at children's aspirations to become president both before and after the election. And we found, first off, children's aspirations to become president were quite high. So about half of the kids in the study said, yes, I want to be president when I grow up, which I think is not something you would find among adults, for example.
Break that down for the African-American versus European-American versus Latino American.
Sure, sure. The rates of interest in becoming president were highest among African-American and Latino children. They were lower among European-American children. So among European-American children, it's only about 30% of kids said they wanted to be president. Interestingly, all aspirations were also a little higher among girls and among boys, which, again, is not necessarily what we would expect. But so I think one of the things that's interesting in this study is it shows that although children are aware of the possibility of racial bias in politics, also we're still seeing that African-American and Latino children are really very interested in becoming president themselves. And I think one of the questions for future research, future study, is going to be, how can we maintain that interest? How can we maintain that political engagement and those high positive aspirations over time?
Let's take a phone call here from Mike. Mike, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
All right. My point, I guess, would be is that I don't think it's unreasonable at all for Latino or Hispanic children to look at it and see forms of discrimination. I mean, I've been a little bit of studying into this and seen a few research papers, and even among, say, college graduates, among African Americans, their unemployment rate is double that of whites who have college degrees, and you see cases like this over and over again. And so I guess it wouldn't be unreasonable for Hispanic children eventually to learn this, or I guess to experience this, that they face numerous discriminations that whites or European Americans really don't face.
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely children, and that's one of the things we know from this study and lots of different studies of kids, is that they're very attentive to what's going on in their worlds. They're paying attention. They're taking that information in. And when they see experiences with bias and they see experiences with discrimination, or even when they see the patterns that you're talking about employment and unemployment and that kind of thing, they're paying attention to that, and it's affecting how they think about the world. So again, I agree that it's not that surprising that kids would necessarily be aware of those kinds of patterns.
Hey, thanks for your phone call. I opened up our segment today, and you end your presentation with that quote from Obama. There's an entire generation that will grow up taking for granted that the highest office in the land is filled by an African-American. If you did this survey in 2012, or let's say 2013, do you think the results would be different? Obviously different candidates, and we already had an African-American president elected. How would the results be different?
I think that's a really interesting question. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do a follow-up study with the 2012 election. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's certainly still an awareness of the impact of bias and discrimination in racial issues. I think one of the things that came up, within the in Obama's first term, were the continuing questions about, is he really American born, and those kinds of things. And I think kids hearing those kinds of messages, that sort of skepticism about whether our first African American president is a real American or that kind of thing. That could potentially continue to impact their views of how different types of candidates, how different types of politicians are perceived. So certainly I think there would be potentially the continuation of concern about bias. But I do also think the fact that we'd had a successful African-American candidate for president would potentially help to maintain children's optimism and those high levels of aspirations and so forth. So there's certainly, I think, positive impacts from seeing Obama in that role continually. Absolutely.
What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on a couple of different projects now. One of the studies that I'm working on developing is a study about children's perceptions of social class. So I've done a lot of work with race and gender. There's not as much work out there on social class, so children's understanding of wealth and poverty and how that relates to their understanding of equality and fairness and that sort of thing. I'm also working on potentially developing a theoretical model of how children develop particular political ideologies. So what kinds of childhood experiences in terms of parenting or school or those kinds of things could potentially lead children to be more liberal or conservative as adults.
Let's take one more phone call here from Clarence in Kansas City, Missouri. Clarence, welcome to Central Standard.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, the first point I wanted to make was we should always mention our common origin, which is Africa. Everybody on this planet who is alive came from Africa. And, you know, we don't like to always mention that, but it's true, you know. And as far as the education of our children, that is really what determines them, you know, the way they interact with their teachers and their parents and their peers. And, you know, if teachers are immensely important, because when a teacher sees something, he can interrupt it, you know, if it's something unfair. They can interrupt that and say, no, you can't do that. That isn't true, you know.
And absolutely, yes.
You can set them straight.
Yes, and I think we've talked a lot today about parents. We haven't talked as much about teachers, but teachers absolutely can be very influential in talking to kids and in showing models. I think schools are a great place for children to see models of people from a variety of racial groups who have achieved important things, not just in politics, but in science and in art and in music and all of these different kinds of things. And showing those models from a variety of different backgrounds is one way that schools can absolutely be influential. Clarence, I think you also make an important point, which is one of the things we often do want to emphasize with children is what we have in common. So certainly I've been talking a lot today about racial groups and differences and that kind of thing, but it's certainly true that we also really want to emphasize to children that we do have these common origins and that we have a lot in common. And I think one thing that we can do in terms of talking about politics is talking about overall, what are our American values? What do we have in common as Americans? What are the things that are important to us as Americans that help to bond us together, rather than necessarily focusing on differences and things that might be more divisive? And both parents and teachers can certainly communicate those messages to children.
Clarence, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
What is it, Megan, that you enjoy working with children as opposed to working with adults? What can we learn from children that we can't learn from adults?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, that's a really general question.
No.
As it applies to studying them in studies like this.
Right.
What do you get out of them that you would never be able to get out of an adult?
Well, I think one of the biggest things you get from working with children that you wouldn't get from adults, particularly in terms of studying gender and race, is that unfiltered kind of honest response. So that idea of saying, you know, this is really what I think about race. This is really what I think about gender. And I'm just going to blurt it right out there. I think adults tend to be a lot more guarded in terms of talking about gender and race. And so you have to be a lot more careful at trying to sort of tease out their attitudes, whereas children will be much more explicit and overt. And I think that's one of the things that makes working with them very interesting.
Megan Patterson is an assistant professor of psychology and research and education at KU. Megan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, but when we return, we'll meet the head coach and a forward from the new FC Kansas City soccer team. Central Standard returns in just a moment.